Show, all about golf, from putting to driving, from hooks to whatever. Now, here's your host of the Back Nine Boys Golf Show, Rich Stiles.
Welcome to the show. The Back Nine Boys is brought to you by Bridgestone Golf. Play the Tour B ball with Mindset Technology. By the club at Sea Pumps. By Pro Series Golf Irons with Face Forward Technology. By PXG, you've never played like this before. By RSM, proud sponsor of the RSM Classic, giving back to our community. By Stitch Golf, dress your game. And by CJ's Italian Restaurant, voted best pizza, known for their deep dish and thin crust. But you got to check out their full menu at cjsitalianrestaurant.com. Our guest this morning is Champions Tour player Tim O'Neill from Savannah. Tim, welcome to the Back Nine Boys.
Hey, Rich. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. How did you feel? How would you assess your season last year?
A little bit up and down. I made a coming down the stretch there the last two or three tournaments. Had a good finish in Raleigh. Pretty much locked me in, finishing in the top 36, making it to the Schwab Cup again. So, you know, I'm going into my fourth year on the Champions Tour, which sounds crazy. You know, time has flown by. You know, I'm getting ready for my fourth season. But for me to have made it to the Schwab Cup last 2 years in a row, I'm looking forward to this year coming up and just searching for a little bit more consistency in 26.
Is that what you're looking for this year as far as trying to improve on is your consistency?
Yes. That's been one of the main things that my main focus is coming up here is just to be more consistent with everything. And I think if I can do that, I'm 26. I think I'll have a good year. I'm sure of it.
So since the Charles Schwab Cup, what have you been working on? Because I know you're leaving, coming up to go to Hawaii. So what have you been working on in the last few weeks?
Just mainly short game. Just dialing in my wedges. On the Champions Tour or even the PGA Tour, it's so important to be able to have a good short game, a consistent short game. It's nice. Everyone wants to see guys hit it 320, 330. But, you know, that doesn't mean anything if you can't chip and putt. So especially on the Champions Tour, around the greens, 100 from 120 yards. And then if you're strong in those areas, I watched the guys like Alker and Miguel and all the top guys every week in and week out. One thing is consistent is their short games are really good. And so that's something that I'm always working on and always trying to get better.
When you first got on the Champions Tour, what was one of the biggest things that you realized was different from the other places that you had played?
I never really played the PGA Tour, but for me, after probably my first two or three weeks out there, like I just said, it all comes down to short game. Guys just don't make many mistakes. That's all. They don't make many bogeys. I tend to make a lot of birdies. A lot of times I make more birdies than the guy that actually won the tournament, but I'm not finishing where I need to. So I just make too many of the small mistakes. And that's where the consistency comes in. What I'm really working on is, you know, you're going to have bad swings. You're not going to hit good shots, but sometimes I tend to make bogeys where I shouldn't make bogeys. So that's the main thing. The top guys, they don't make many mistakes. You know, through 54 hole tournaments, they might have two or three bogeys for the whole week, and that's where I'm trying to get.
Putting seems to be. I know you talk about short game. And you try and get your shots from the fairway as close as you can to have birdie chances. And as you said, you make a lot of birdies. But putting really comes down to if you're stroking the ball the way you want to, and you've got the confidence that the ball can go in, putting becomes sometimes a bigger factor than trying to chip up or trying to get your wedges close. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're a really good putter, a lot of times you can get away with a lot. You know, you can not hit a good bunker shot or not hit a good wedge shot. But if you're making putts, you know, that's kind of the it can really bail you out in a lot of ways. So putting is a very key component. I mean, because there's nothing like playing around and you're hitting, you know, 15, 16 greens and you're not making any putts. I don't know what's frustrating. If you're hitting it all over the lot and making everything, are you hitting a lot of greens and can't make anything? So putting is one of the things that the glue that kind of holds everything together. If you're making putts, then you almost feel like you're bulletproof out there.
Yeah. Putting can cover up a lot of mistakes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah,
for sure.
When you first got out there, were you kind of in awe of some of the players that you were playing next to or paired with or just seeing on the range? I mean, Freddie Couples would be one of those guys that I think is one of the nicest guys out there. But just being able to stand next to him and hit golf balls, I'd feel, well, totally inferior. But that's beside the point.
Yeah, I mean, my first year, you know, on tour, you know, I'm playing with guys that I've watched on TV forever. So I'm not going to say in awe, but, you know, I do tend to watch them hit balls, just like you say, Freddie, you know, VJ, a lot of the guys that you've watched on TV forever, David Duvall, you know, and then when I'm playing in tournaments with these guys, then you actually see how good they are, you know, how they move, how they get around. You know, play with Stricker a couple times and play with Ernie a bunch of times and, you know, Bernhardt, you know, just how he navigates around the golf course. And, you know, everyone's a little bit different, but these guys are really good still.
When you look around, whose game do you really admire the way that they play? And I, as you just said, a lot of them play different games, but who do you most admire? Would it be Bernhard because he's been out there so long and at his age, he's still winning or being in contention?
He's a guy that, you know, I want, you just can't, I mean, he won when he was 67. I mean, that's crazy. Like, you don't, I don't know who else is his age that can still win on the Champions Tour, but you know, he's a tactician, you know, he knows his game. He knows how to play. So, you know, you have to be impressed with what he's doing out there, because every time I go to the fitness facility on tour, I see him in there. So there's no secret why the guy still works hard every day. Even after he ruptured his Achilles, he still came back and won. So I don't know if anyone else can do that, because I didn't think that he was going to be back that year. But, you know, he was able to, you know, I don't know what he did, but he was able to get back and still come back and win the last tournament 2 years ago. So, you know, and there's guys that I admire, you know, different parts of their game, how they play. But yeah, you know, I'm just out there watching and paying attention and then, you know, trying to get better myself.
Well, what's your favorite course on the Champions Tour?
Where I won 2 years ago in Virginia.
Of course, where the win is. Yeah,
of course, right? And then now that tournament's gone.
Yeah. Oh, well, hey, there's others out there for you. But besides the one in Virginia that you won, what else is one of your favorites?
I would have to say Firestone's one of my favorites. Okay. Obviously Pebble Beach, you know, but those would probably be the two that stand out other than the one where I won. Pebble and Firestone's definitely one of my favorite courses to play.
Is it the beauty or is it the way the courses are laid out? Because Pebble can be quite challenging sometimes weather-wise. And
yes,
wind and rain and cold and stuff. So, I mean, it's That seems to be one of the most challenging courses, I think, to play, depending on when you play it.
Well, fortunately, from when the Champion Tour plays there in September, we haven't really had bad weather, so I haven't seen
That's good.
bad weather there.
Right.
So I've seen videos where the seventh hole guys are hitting long irons, and I can't even imagine that par three where you're having to hit a long iron. You look like you can almost throw the ball in the green. So I haven't seen weather like that. But I do understand, if the wind is blowing and it's playing tough, because that, pebble is really exposed, I see where it can definitely be a challenge. And then just the beauty in itself, at Pebble Beach is just unbelievable. And then Firestone, it's one of the courses that we play where, you can't fake it around there. You have to hit it good. If you don't hit it good, you're not going to play well, period.
Tim, I've read articles and I've talked to some folks and I've heard other people say that the Champions Tour is one of the hardest tours to get on. That it's a really closed shop. Have you ever heard that, or do you feel that?
Oh, absolutely. And then now, I was, when I made it through at Q school, there were only five spots. So that was hard in itself.
Right.
But now, there's not a Q school, so it's definitely a closed shop now.
So would you say that it's so how does somebody get on the Champions Tour?
Well, for right now, if you don't have status, you have to money qualify and play your way on that way, and that's probably harder than Q school.
Do you think a guy by the name of Tiger is going to have to play his way through Q school, or if he plays on the Champions Tour? Have you guys heard anything?
Tiger can do whatever he wants, but I'm sure he's going to play a few events. I'm hoping that he does. I don't know how his health is right now, but I would think that, well, I'm hoping that he plays a few events. I don't see him playing like a full schedule or anything like that, but I'm hoping that he'll play three or four tournaments, possibly more, but I don't know. It's rumored that he is going to play, but we just don't know when.
Probably one of his goals would be probably some of those majors that he's trying to increase in, and a number of wins, 82. He probably wants to get past that.
Yes.
Lot of options for him.
Yes.
There's also
Yes.
some other guys coming up. I mean, there's Matt Kuchar's probably got a few more years. Jonathan Bird's pretty close. Zach Johnson's pretty close.
Yeah, I think Zach might be turning 50 this year. I think, and then I think another one is Ryan Palmer, might be
Gotcha.
later on this year. Those are the ones I'm sure. I think they might be turning 50 this year.
Do they get an open door to come in based on the time they've been on the PGA Tour and the money that they've won?
I'm pretty sure. I don't know exactly, but I would think so, that those guys would definitely be playing. Yes.
Yeah. The travel. You had to get used to the travel being on the road. How many tournaments are you going to be playing this year?
I pretty much play them all. Every year, yeah, I pretty much played every tournament.
Okay.
So yeah, there's not any tournaments that I plan on taking off, unless something comes up where I can't be there. My son's getting ready to go into the Air Force, and if a graduation, whatever date that falls on, that might take me out of the tournament. But as far as now, I plan on playing everyone.
Well, Tim, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to talk with us. Appreciate it. Best of luck to you on the Champions Tour and enjoy your time in Hawaii, and let's get another win this year.
Absolutely. I'm definitely working towards that way, and I expect to have a big 26 this year.
You got it. God bless. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hi, I'm Jamie Donaldson. I am an aim point and a performance coach, specifically in putting, and I love listening to the Back Nine
Welcome
Boys.
back. I'm Rich Stiles. Our guest this morning is Fred Alvater, the host of Back Nine Report. And Fred, thanks for being with us. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Rich, always a pleasure, man. I haven't talked to you for a while. Good seeing you.
It has been an interesting year so far, as early as it is in terms of the tours. What
are your thoughts, and I know you and I have spoken about this off air, but what are you thinking of the current state of the LPGA Tour?
You know, I know they try and blow it up like everything's hunky-dory and all roses and cream, but I don't think the LPGA is in a very good spot right at the minute. Number one, as you know, Michael Wan just did a fantastic job with the LPGA.
Yeah.
He was there for about 10 years. He came in right when it was at a low point in 2010. Tournaments had dropped off. The ladies didn't have enough tournaments to make the kind of money they needed. They had gotten rid of Carolyn Bevins, who was running the tour at the time. And Michael came in with a fresh approach, a lot of energy, completely turned it around in a short period of time, really. All the negatives that the LPGA Tour had at the time, he turned them into positives. Plus, he hired Craig Kann back then, and Craig just did a fantastic job with marketing and getting the ladies to buy into what he was doing, just right. Like their names on the caddy bibs, and making sure they took time to interact with all the young girls and women along the rope line. You know, the LPGA is still probably the friendliest, the most accessible to players right. of any of the tours. You've seen that. You know, we can pretty much talk to anybody. But then when Michael decided it was time to leave, he had a waiting list of sponsors for tournaments. Okay, so if somebody wanted to drop out, he had somebody already in the wings ready to jump in. Well, so when he left to go to the USGA, the tour hired Molly Marcoux-Simon. And Molly is complete opposite personality from Michael Wan. She's very quiet, closed off. And she just not approachable. We pretty much had an open door with Michael Wan. If I want to talk to him about something, I mean, he was, boy, just no problem. He knew me, and I'd see him in a tournament. We'd talk and tape a quick thing or talk or just chat. And Molly, I tried the whole time she was in there to get an interview. Well, you know, Molly's really busy. And yeah, I know she is, but she's got 10 minutes. She can talk to me. Never. Right. Never. I never once talked to Molly Marcoux. Never. Not once. And for the commissioner of the LPGA not to interact with media people like us, that's not a good thing.
Right.
And so she lost sponsors. I mean, the tour is down. They've lost a couple really good tournaments over the last couple of years. And at the same time, they've raised purses. Okay. And so the purse size, the average purse size is the average median income for the LPGA has gone from 180,000 to 320,000. Okay. The purse sizes are up drastically. You know, and the ladies always say, well, we want to be paid the same as men. Well, that's fine, but you don't bring in the money. You don't bring in the income that the right. men's tour brings right. in. So it's just not feasible. But they have raised the purses dramatically over the years. And so they've got this rising purse expenses that they're paying, but they don't have increased sponsorship to pay for that. And plus, the really thing that really gets me is that I want to get the numbers here. In April of 2024, the most watched Saturday was 320,000, which that's like an average day for, say, the Golf Channel. Okay,
right.
that's not a real big audience. The PGA Tour, for example, will draw over a million just on a minor tournament. Okay,
right, right.
And so, in 2025, the highest rated tournament was 240,000, and the average had dropped down to 100,000. That's a 60% decrease in viewership. So if you're a sponsor and you're paying a number to get eyeballs on your product that's being sold, advertised at this tournament, and you're only getting 60% of what you're paying for, you're not going to be too happy.
No.
Okay.
No.
When it comes renewal time, you're not going to want to jump back in there at that higher price. So I see problems coming for the LPGA. I know Craig Kessler, the new guy that took over for Molly now, his background is in media, and everything he's worked with, everything he's touched has grown drastically in the first two or three years. And maybe he can turn it around. I see they just made a deal where every domestic LPGA tournament is going to be on network television. It's going to be viewable.
Live or recorded?
No, live.
Okay.
Now you're going to have to bounce around between NBC, Golf Channel, and Peacock, you know, like they like to do.
Right.
But it's they're going to be available. And then they just made this new thing with Tiger's TGL, Tiger Rory's TGL, where they're going to be a women's TGL next year. You know, that's going to bring some more eyeballs and maybe get some excitement going. But he's got an uphill climb for sure, Rich, is from what I'm seeing.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, and you're right. I mean, sponsors want viewers, and if they're not getting them, they're going to pull back or cancel and not renew. But with the retirement of Stacey Lewis and possible shorter schedule for ladies like Lexi Thompson, that obviously is going to affect sponsors and viewers even more, because you have a lot of people from across the pond that are playing and nobody knows them.
That's the other big point. You know, the Lexi Thompsons, the Stacey Lewis's, you know, now Lexi Tom, I mean, they're gone. You know, Lexi's still playing a little bit here and there,
right?
But you don't have a big American name. Nelly Korda is the biggest name. And last year, she had a terrible year. She's, you know, probably more involved in getting married, becoming engaged and getting married. And now she's going to want to start a family just like her sister did.
Sure.
And now her sister's going to come back and play a little bit. But Nellie's going through that now. She's going to be a mother. And we've seen it time after time after time. The young women, you know, when they come in at 17, 18, 19 years old, that's all they want to do is play golf. But then when they get to be, you know, 23, 24, 25, they start looking for a husband and a family. Okay. And that's just the way things are. And it's great. Right. It's wonderful. That's the way it should be. And after that, now that they've got a child, it's a whole different ball game. They don't want to leave that child at home. They want to take them home. Now that brings in a whole new set of problems, traveling with the child. So we need, and there are two or three young women right now that are amateurs that are going to be stars. But there's right. probably still 2-3 years away that college players and really good amateur players that are just turning pro right now. And they're Americans, so they're going to be good. But you're exactly right. The Asians and the Europeans are dominating the winner's circle and grabbing trophies, and that doesn't appeal to American audience at all.
Yeah, I know sometimes when I go and look at the leaderboard, if I don't see Nelly or somebody that I recognize, it's like, oh, all right, I'll just go somewhere else. It's really affecting their viewership. And then the recorded of the LPGA tournaments has not helped. They exactly. definitely need that TV time. Let's change topics and go to the LIV Tour. I don't like to yeah. talk about that a lot, but let's go there. Do you think they're in trouble with the departure of Brooks?
I've said for 2 years that they're done.
Yeah.
They're still operating. The couple problems with the LIV. One is that they don't get official world golf ranking points. And so Brooks Koepka, John Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau, they've won majors, so they still have exemptions, so they still get in the majors. But that's only a 5-year deal now. Okay. It's not like the 10 years like it used to be. It's only five.
Right.
So
right.
those are going to be coming to an end one of these days, okay? And if they can't get official world golf rank points, they're not going to get into the majors. The second, and so the LIV tried to address this and get points. Well, the OWGR has turned them down time after time after time. Well, you've got, it was Jay Monahan, and now it's Brian Roloff, the new CEO. He's not a commissioner anymore. He's a CEO.
Right.
They sit on that board, on the OWGR board. Luke Donald sits on that board. They're not going to be willing to give the LIV. They don't want to give them ranking points because they know that's a big deal for them. Okay. Their guys are going to leave if they can't get world ranking points. And so that's one of the things. And so they went to 72 holes this year trying to get OWGR points. Well, they're still a closed shop. So the other arguing point for the OWGR was, well, you're a closed shop. You only have 54 golfers. You know, you're not open. It's just a locked deal. And so they're not going to go away from that. They're locked into that. But then the other problem is that the LIV is not going to pay these big bonuses anymore to get the guys to come. Okay.
Right.
And so why would I go to a tour that's not going to pay me a bonus that, yeah, has good purses and you only play like 14 or 18 times or whatever it is per year? But I can't get world ranking points. This doesn't make sense to me. You know, we just saw Brooks Koepka leave. Bryson DeChambeau's contract's going to be up before long. And if I were the new CEO of the PGA Tour, Brian Rolla, I would go to four or five of my best, biggest sponsors and say, hey, you know, we can't pay appearance money here in the PGA Tour, but if you guys would go to Bryce and say, hey, if you come back to PGA Tour, we'll give you a $4 or $5 million sponsorship deal, you know, to do our products and stuff and wear our brands, that's 20, 25 million a year without winning anything. Okay.
Right.
I would think that would get his attention to come back. I don't know what could possibly hold him to LIV. And I think deep down, I mean, he's built a new brand. He's now probably the most popular golfer, right? People want to see him play. And if he's playing at LIV, nobody's seeing him. I see they just signed a new deal with one of the streaming services to bring some of their tournaments to there. But they don't draw anybody. You talk about the LPGA drawing 300,000. The LIV draws nobody. Nobody watches on TV.
Yeah. Well, word is that they're gonna go to 72 holes so they can get the world ranking points. But I still
don't close
think,
shop though. No, still I know. Close shop.
Yeah, but it's just I don't think it's gonna help. And there's only about three or four guys that went from the PGA Tour to LIV that you really would consider wanting back on the tour to see play again.
John Rahm, Cam Smith, maybe Bryson DeChambeau, Dustin Johnson. I don't care if he comes back. Brooks Koepka, I really don't care if he comes back.
Right.
You know?
I don't
know.
So
the two or three guys is all that I really want to see that's on the LIV tour anyhow.
All right.
And Rahm's locked in now for a few more years. So
yeah. And then by then he'll be passe and it really won't matter.
Yeah.
All right.
Exactly.
One other thing, your opinion on Vijay Singh taking his one-time money exemption, taking a spot away from up-and-coming stars or current stars that aren't in the top 100, and taking a spot in the PGA Tour for this year?
So one of the things that the background is there's less spots available for the PGA Tour. They've
Correct.
Increased purse sizes, but to do that, they've had to decrease the number of tour players and that tee it up every week and that earn cards. So it's harder to get into PGA Tour events, even if you're now eligible to do it. If you're
right.
coming off the Korn Ferry Tour, you know,
right.
they have these different rankings. And so it makes it hard to get into some of these events. So every spot is valuable. But the other side of this to me is that Vijay Singh has earned that. Okay. He's earned it. The rule is there. He earned it. He did the stuff. You can argue he's 60-some years old. Why is he out there trying to mix it up with the young guys? Well, obviously, in his mind, he thinks he can still compete at those distances and on those courses. I don't think he probably can, but, you know, he has a pretty big ego, and he doesn't – Vijay Singh has never really gone with the norm. He kind of goes his own way.
Yeah.
And but just the idea of taking a spot from a young guy, that's unfortunate. But the other side of that, Rich, is that Vijay Singh has earned it. So I can't. I really don't have a big, strong opinion one way or another.
Yeah, I just don't like the fact that he is taking it because he can still play on the Champions Tour and make some money. Money's not an issue for him all the years
right.
that he's played and how much money that he's won. So
right.
anyway, Fred, as always, thank you for being with us. Enjoy the PGA show, and thank you very much for being with us.
Always great, Rich. Look forward to seeing you down there.
All right, take care.
Hi, I'm Mark Sweeney, founder of Aimpoint Golf, and you're listening to the Back Nine Boys.
Welcome back. I'm Rich Stiles. Our next guest is Ron Cyrak, well-known writer for Golf Digest and a contributing writer and personality for Golf Channel. Ron, welcome to the show.
Always a pleasure to be on with you, Rich.
Let's talk first off about LPGA. I just talked with a golf writer who thinks the LPGA is in trouble financially. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, they're sort of always in trouble financially. You know, they never get the kind of hefty long-term contracts, sponsor contracts, the PGA Tour gets. And I think that they have two issues that are facing them right now, which is, one, the lack of a clear star out there, a clear number one player to build around. And two, the fact that there's more competition for the eyeballs for women's sports rights now. You know, the Caitlin Clark effect has been both a good and a bad thing for the LPGA. It puts women's sports on a front burner for in terms of corporate marketing, but it created competition. Now the LPGA is going up against the WNBA. It's going up against women's college basketball. It's going up against the women's national soccer team. So there is more competition out there right now for those people who are fans of women's sports.
And then you also got to add in women's softball. I mean, that is huge. Yes. On ESPN.
Right, right. And, all of that is, what it speaks to is a success of Title IX, that there are so many other opportunities out there for women to play sports now in college, and then those are expanding into professional leagues. So there's a lot of competition. But that lack of a dominant player, number one player, I think the individual sports, boxing, tennis, golf, all do better when there's a clear number one that people are trying to knock off. And the LPGA doesn't really have that right now.
Do you think that the new commissioner understands and sees the fields getting a little bit different as far as well-known players like Nelly Korda, but with Lexi kind of doing a limited schedule, Stacy retiring? I mean, what's that going to do to viewership? It's got to be down.
Yeah, the situation that they're in right now is Nelly Korda has had two breakthrough years in 2021 and 2024, and neither time was she able to follow it up with a year on top of that, to build success upon success. And we really haven't had somebody with a run at the top. We had Stacey Lewis before that in NB Park. Yannick Sen, and then you got her back to Ochoa and Sorenstam, but they haven't had that dominant player. And if you look last year, the top four players in the Rookie of the Year points were all from Japan. Mio, yeah. Yamashita, Ryo Takeda, the EY sisters, Chizzy and Akia. So you got to look down to number eight on the Rookie of the Year. Jenny Bay was the highest American there. I do think the other problem, LPGA starts end of January in Florida. Then they're off for 3 weeks. Then they go to Asia for 3 weeks. They don't really get going until the end of March in California to get into a really run up to capture the attention of the American media market. And then beginning the first week of June, they have four major championships in 7 weeks. So everything gets compressed in a short period. But those off weeks in the beginning of the schedule and those Asia trips at both the beginning and the end of the schedule is a time when they lose viewers.
So what USA players besides Nelly should we or could we be looking out for in this year or next year?
Well, it's that's a very good question because Lexi is baffles me in that, I swear I covered her retirement at Pebble Beach a couple of years ago. I was at that press conference. And she's sort of become like Nancy. I think I covered Nancy Lopez's retirement four different times.
Oh, wow. So, yeah.
But there's not an American in waiting out there right now. There is not the one, that we thought it was going to be Rose Zhang, and maybe it still will be. But we don't have the person out there right now who's got our attention and got our interest and let's see what happens with her.
So what should the game plan be for this new commissioner and the struggles ahead for sponsorships, especially long-term sponsorships for the LPGA? Do you see a light at the end of the tunnel?
Well, I think the single biggest thing that the LPGA needs is better TV coverage, more expansive TV coverage. Well, right. The Golf Channel does a great job covering them. When you're on Golf Channel, you're preaching to the choir. Those people are already golf fans. You need to get weekend rounds on network television so that you reach the casual golf fan, the casual sports fan, and draw in those other people. And he is working towards towards that, towards trying to get that exposure on the weekend. This year, for the first time ever, every round of the LPGA will be shown on live TV on either Golf Channel or CNBC. And then, and some of it will be on the networks on the weekend, but they need more network exposure. They are going to reach into that area of the computer simulated golf this year. They are going at the end of the season, going from late 2026 into early 2027, have the version of what the men already have, which is a team computer simulated golf out there. That reaches, it's shown, that's reaching a younger audience. Right. It is bringing new fans into the game. And they're going to try to go that route to build up their fan base.
Do you think they're going to have enough players that people will know these players by their name or by their game in order to field three or four teams in order to compete as often as they can?
Well, I think it's right up Lexi Thompson's alley. You know, she will probably end up being sort of the face of that. It's going to be interesting to me to see exactly where Nelly Korda falls in all this. I've always felt she could be more aggressive as a marketer for the LPGA than she is. Doesn't really embrace that role as aggressively as I'd like to see her do it. So it will be interesting to see who become the faces there. The player that they ended up with at the end of the year is the number one player, Gino Titicul from Thailand, is a really compelling player. She's funny. She's smart. She's fluent in English. You know, she is somebody they could build some marketing around. They just got to educate the fans better about exactly who she is. And last year, one of the biggest problems the LPGA had is they went 27 tournaments before they had a repeat winner. The first 26 tournaments were won by 26 different players. And then Titicul ended up winning two of the last four, ended up with three wins on the year, and was the clear breakout player. But they went virtually the entire season with nobody claiming the year as, this is my year, I'm the best player out here. Every week there was a different winner. And that's the problem.
Well, you followed the LPGA for many, many years, and you followed Nelly. Why do you think she can't have that? She has a rocket year, many wins, and then she kind of goes flat and then has another record year and then goes flat. What do you think goes on in those flat years?
The first time in 2021, she won four tournaments, a major championship, and the Olympic gold medal. Big breakout year. Then right. After that, she had some physical problems. She had a blood clot in her shoulder. She had some back issues. So there were some physical things that were in there. This past year, you look at it, I think in scoring average, she was second on tour in scoring average. She just didn't win. And I went through all of her stats, and every one of her stats was exactly as good as it was the previous year when she won seven times, except for one, which was strokes gained around the green, that up and down game. And boy, that's the difference between being a dominant player and not being a dominant player, is giving away that one or two strokes over the course of 72 holes so that you finish second or third or fourth instead of winning. I would like to see, I hope that she worked on that. I always used to think, one of the things that impressed me about Annika Sörenstam when she was full Annika out there is at the end of every year, she'd look at her stats and she'd identify, what's the one thing I could work on to improve my game? One year in the off season, for 6 weeks, she did nothing but putt. Another year, it was sand saves. She would identify the weakness in her game and work on it and get better. And, I never saw that from Lexi Thompson, whose short game is dreadful, you know, and I would like to see it from Nelly. Identify those shortcomings and get better. The three best, biggest, most impressive winners I've covered out here are Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, and Annika Sörenstam. And what they had in common was they not only forgot their losses really quickly, they forgot their wins really quickly. They'd win a tournament and they'd play the next week with a passion and intensity as if they'd never won a tournament in their life. I think it's hard it's hard to do that. It's hard to build on success. How many players have we seen are going to be the next Tiger Woods? And Jordan Spieth couldn't keep it going, and Rory McIlroy couldn't keep it going, and Justin Thomas couldn't keep it going. And, you know, it's been the same thing in women's golf, where somebody has that breakthrough year, but they can't build on that success. And one of the challenges, and we'll see it this year with Gino Titicul, is once you are successful, you get to be number one, the demands on you become greater.
Right.
From sponsors, from fans, from the media, from everybody. How do you keep that focus? Tiger Woods once told me the most important word you need to learn to say after you've won a major is no. You need to be able to turn down opportunities.
So what are your thoughts on the several great years that a guy named Scottie Scheffler's had? I mean, every year it's like, you know, last year he started out slow and then finished very strong. Do you think he can continue all of this, or do you think there'll be somebody soon that will be able to challenge him in the way that they would love to have challenged Tiger?
Yeah, you know, he's carried it longer than anybody else that we had out there now. I mean, we're into like the fourth year of right. Scottie being the dominant player out there. That's pretty impressive. You know, McIlroy won four majors by the time he was 24 years old, and then went 10 years without winning another major. You know, Jordan Spieth combined them all in a very short period of time, over 2 years. But Scottie's at the point now where I'm a believer that he could keep this going another 5-6 years. You know, if you do that, you sort of look at it. There's a few exceptions to the rule out there. Jack Nicklaus is one. Sam Snead was one. But basically, you have a 6 to 8 year run of greatness at the top. Arnold Palmer won all of his majors from 58 to 64. Ben Hogan from 46 to 53. You know, it's a narrow window for success out there. And Scottie's got a chance to keep it going for that 6-8 year period, which then really takes you into that realm of where you're considered one of the 10 or 12 best golfers ever to play the game. And he's made me a believer. I think he's not only got the game, I think he's got the right mental attitude to keep winning. There's that fire to want to win is not something I think that's learned or taught. I think it's something that's just inside certain people that make you a great winner. And I think he's got that intangible in him.
All right. One last question. We've got about a minute left. With all the money that Scottie's won and all the money that's now on the PGA Tour, do you think early retirement will start coming into the picture? We're saying, how much more money do I need? I mean, will the competitiveness in him continue, even though he's got more money right now than he needs for the rest of his life? It's generational money for him.
I think he can continue it for a few more years because he does have that fire and passion inside of him. And because, you know, he wasn't one of those people who was really out there at 18, 19, 20 years old. You know, I look at when you start young, you end young, you know, and his success came more in his mid-20s and started in his mid-20s, late 20s. I think he can keep that going into his early 30s. I remember once when Tiger Woods turned pro and he went out there and he had $67 million in endorsement money in his back pocket before he'd ever won a tournament. And I said to Jack Nicklaus, don't you wish you had had that kind of money in your pocket when you turned pro? And Jack said, it was never about the money. It was always about winning. And I think for Scottie, it's the same thing. It's not about the money. It's about winning.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. Ron, always great to have you. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Talk to you down the road, my friend.
All right. Take care.
You've been listening to the Back Nine Boys Golf Show with Rich Stiles. Go to back9boys.com for all things golf whenever you want it. We'll be back next week with an all-new Back Nine Boys at back9boys.com.